Hello.
Podcast Network Asia.
You're listening to episode 2 of a 3-part series in the last 24 hours, where we now discover the ugly truth inside the beautiful home of the Gonzalez family.
According to the Sydney Morning Herald, Seth Gonzalez went out clubbing and concerned himself mainly with thoughts of a solo singing career months after his family's funeral. He had been a member of an a cappella group called Definite Vibes and claimed that he had been offered a record deal after his rendition of One Sweet Day at the funeral was seen on TV. He also bragged about setting up a foundation called Seth G Street Kids on stage, which he used to reach out to organizations such as the Starlight Foundation so he can be invited to functions as a VIP guest. During this time, he also sent persistent emails asking for money to his aunt, who managed his family's affairs in the Philippines. He even provided her with his family's death certificates to speed up the process. But those death certificates would prove to be fake documents that Seth created himself. Neither was he offered a record deal as a result of his moving performance at his family's funeral. The Seth G Foundation also did not exist. In fact, the investigators quickly realized that nothing about Seth is real or true at all. They started bugging his phone and soon discovered that underneath the baby-faced facade is a cold, calculating, pathological liar who would stop at nothing to get what he wanted. By December 2001, the investigators were convinced that Seth was lying about his alibis, so they tapped his phones and leaked through one of his friends that there were two recorded sightings of his car in the family home garage on the afternoon of the murder. This would be inconsistent with Seth's first alibi, where he claimed to be driving around at the time of the murder, so he quickly came up with a second alibi of spending the afternoon with a prostitute at a brothel in Chatswood instead. To support his alibi, Seth called the brothel in Chatswood, asking about their surveillance cameras and for copies of their employee rosters. He also paid a taxi driver $50 to write and sign a dictated statement saying that he drove him to Chatswood on the day of the murders. Unfortunately for him, the sex worker he'd chosen, a woman he'd hired before, was off during the week of the murder. Worse, he'd been under police surveillance all along, and they have all of this rather sloppy attempts at a cover-up on record. In truth, Seth Gonzalez was home on July 10, 2001. According to court records, he got home in a rage sometime between 3 to 4 p.m. after a tense meeting with his parents at the law office where he worked part-time. After he spent the rest of the afternoon viciously attacking and killing his family, he went about reconstructing the crime scene to make it look like it was a case of a violent, racially motivated home invasion. He picked up the contents of his parents' bags and scattered them all over the floor. Then, after a quick shower to get rid of all the blood on him, he changed into clean clothes before spray painting the phrase "Fuck off Asians" on the living room wall. At 6 p.m., just after he stabbed his mother to death, he quietly hid in the shadows as his aunt rang the doorbell multiple times to check in on the family. She left after no one answered the door. Later, he removed the fly screen from the back window in a superfluous attempt to make it seem like a break-in and set off to a still unknown location to get rid of the murder weapons. At around 8 p.m., he continued with the rest of the evening, having dinner and playing video games with his friend as if nothing horrific had happened at all. The Sydney Morning Herald reported that the police believed Seth didn't plan on having to discover the bodies of his family. Shockingly, they also revealed that this wasn't Seth's first attempt at murder. Before we proceed, let's hear a quick word from our fellow podcasters from Podcast Network Asia.
Ako si Paul. At ako naman, si Ra.
Come listen to our podcast called
Stories Philippines Podcast.
The very first Pinoy horror anthology podcast.
Pakinggan ang mga kwentong nakakatakot,
nakakakilabot, at hayaan mo kaming iparamdam sa iyo na
hindi ka nag-iisa sa kinauupuan mo. Available in all major podcast platforms, powered by Podcast Network Asia.
In February 2001, a search of Seth's internet records would reveal that he had been researching poisonous plants and ordered toxic seeds, which he eventually shelled and mixed with warm water. He kept this prepared potion in a canister under his bedside table, which the police would later find when they collected evidence on the day of his family's murder. To divert any suspicion of his motives, Seth sent anonymous letters to a major food company, including the Australian Federal Police and Quarantine Service, warning both of impending cases of food tampering and poisoning. Traces of these letters were found on his laptop, and his fingerprint was also lifted from one of the envelopes. In July 2001, just a month before he would brutally slaughter all three members of his family, Seth slipped some of the toxic seeds into his mom's food. She fell violently ill and was admitted at the Sydney Adventist Hospital. Seth himself would feign a stomach upset and told people that the water at a restaurant where the family recently dined might have been the culprit. Claridades would, however, recover and soon returned home, unaware that the worst is yet to come. Seth was arrested on June 13, 2002, and was charged with 3 counts of murder and 1 count of threatening product contamination. After the trial, he claimed that he meant to use the liquid they had found in his room for himself because he wanted to kill himself after his parents told him to break it off with a girl they disapproved for him. It would be one of many revelations that exposed Seth's volatile relationship with his family. Although Claridades and Teodoro expected Seth to either become a heart surgeon or a lawyer, favoring the eldest to eventually take over the family firm, both siblings were constantly pitted against each other when it came to school achievements, and Seth was losing. Seth was facing expulsion at his second attempt at a university degree. Months before the murder, he provided a flurry of presumably fake medical certificates to lecturers, claiming that he is suffering from upper respiratory infections so he can take supplementary exams that would hopefully change his 4 fails. Eventually, he created fake academic transcripts to show to his parents and offered to do the same for his sister, but Claudine refused and chose to expose his deception to their parents instead. As a result, Claridades and Teodoro threatened to take away his privileges, his generous allowance, and the use of his beloved Ford Festiva. He had to take the bus to school, which he reportedly hated. 4 days before the murder, he would get into another serious altercation with his parents. It's not clear if it's over the same girl, but this time, they made the more serious threat of cutting him off his inheritance and told him that they would not be welcome home if he continued his relationship with this woman, whom they felt was 4 years too old for Seth. In a Sydney Morning Herald report, Seth confided to his uncle Edmund months before the deaths that he felt like his life had turned upside down. The young man admitted to feeling trapped, not knowing what to do, and unable to stop the momentum of falling deeper into the unknown. On July 10th, he fell into that darkness and gave in to his demons with unmerciful fury. He was found guilty of all charges against him and was sentenced to 3 concurrent life sentences without parole on May of 2004. After the sentencing, Justice Bruce James remarked, "I consider that the murders show features of very great heinousness and that there are no facts mitigating the objective seriousness of the murders. Hence, it falls within the worst category of murder at common law." Seth continues to profess his innocence to this day. The Gonzalez Dream Home on Collins Street was refurbished and put back on the market shortly after the murders, where it remained unsold for 3 years. In October 2004, A couple from Taiwan bought the property from the realtors without knowing about the violent history of the house. They demanded a refund, but the realtor initially refused as they were no under legal obligation to disclose the property's history. The sale would eventually lead the New South Wales government to make it illegal to fail to disclose information that could have substantial impact on the value of the property. But can a house absorb the evil that caused the horrific suffering of people who died within its walls? Can a violent death trap the suffering of its victims and turn their anguish into a malevolent entity that will eventually haunt and terrorize the living? The Buddhist couple who nearly bought the house certainly did not want to find out. Even as they lost a substantial amount of money in pulling out of buying a Gonzales home, they cut their losses, then risked the horror of living among restless, murdered souls. And who can blame them? Frightening cases of hauntings in homes tainted by vicious crimes exist, and they terrify and fascinate us in equal measure. For instance, the violent incidents that have turned one lovely Dutch colonial home in Long Island, New York, bears a chilling similarity to the Gonzales murders, an incident that involves a seemingly perfect family, a son on the edge, and one frightening night that turned a home into one of the most known haunted houses in history. A real-life incident that spawned books, documentaries, several movies, and the involvement of the conjuring paranormal couple, Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Are you ready? Because we're about to visit the home of the Lutzes in 112 Ocean Avenue, Amityville, Long Island, New York, famously known as the Amityville Horror House.
Don't miss out on new episodes. Like, subscribe to The Last 24 Hours, or follow the podcast on Facebook at Historia Ni Jet, where you can get in touch, tell me your thoughts, suggest cases, or just say hello. I'll do my best to get back to you.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.